All right, it is Wednesday, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio on 90.3.
Bada bing.
WHPC, WHPC HD. I was Heidi Morales Ryan, my wife and co-host, and of course, I am Thomas Ryan, the two of us sharing the time together here just about every Wednesday and Friday for decades now. And we've been mostly working our way through a series on Wednesday of albums. The idea is trying to more or less salvage the idea of albums because they are pretty, they've been pretty important as far as like conveying the history of music. In our generation, at least, for my entire life, albums were the most important thing, starting in 1955, which is when they first began to become popular. I wasn't born yet at that time, but so for my entire life, they were certainly the most important thing regarding how you could get to understand all different types of music. Of course, in the age that we're in now, the quote-unquote digital age, where everything is more or less being able to be done through all types of services that supply music to people, we're losing track of that. And it's a shame because, you know, there's some amazing things that you can learn from albums. So we took it upon ourselves to do exactly that and to dedicate this show to the preservation of some of the best albums, that the albums that we consider to be the best albums. And 500 of our albums that we've chosen are alternative albums, which is to say simply all that that means is that they never were popular. They never made the top 40. Others did make the top 40. And those are what we call the top 500 of the top 40. So between the two lists, we have 1,000 albums to cover. And we are really, really close to being about halfway through it. With the popular side of things, we're already well past it. As far as the alternative, well, that's a little bit different. But we're going to pick up today with an album that did make the top 40. It actually peaked at number 32 in the United States. I'm looking that up as I'm talking, which is distracting me, but I forgot to write it down. But it's good. There it is, number 32. The album is by Elvis Costello, and it's called My Aim Is True, his debut album. Now, this is 1977 that we're talking about, around the mid, July of 1977, so the middle of the year. And this is when punk, the whole punk scene was burgeoning at this point, as you can see by some of the albums that we've already covered in this series in the past 2 or 3 months, when we were covering other albums from 1977. And the punk movement became popular so quickly that it caught a lot of artists by surprise. There were a few that dismissed it and inevitably suffered the consequences of it, while others were malleable enough to fit themselves into a style that allowed them to be accepted by the punk fans. Elvis Costello was a perfect example of that. He had been writing quite good songs before he had any idea of what punk music was, which was only natural, by the way, because he was an Englishman, not particularly paying close attention to the musical stylizations that at that point were emanating from New York City. So he was mostly following like the pub rock scene in England. And we spoke about that a few times already when we were discussing Graham Parker in particular. And there wasn't a big difference between Graham Parker and Elvis Costello. They're, you know, both I would consider to be among the triumvirate of angry young men. Those two, throw in Joe Jackson, and there you go. Those, you know, the angry young British men. So even though he wasn't paying attention to punk rock, it was soon made obvious, especially by his manager, Jake Riviera, and also the record label that signed him, Stiff, that he needed to comply if he was expected to be accepted and to fit in with the burgeoning punk generation. So the photo of him on the cover of the album, where he's standing almost impossibly skinny with a nerdy and pigeon-toed posture on his debut album cover, made him seem plausible as a spokesman for this new style. He pretty much did that to make himself look like he was an outsider that would have him fit in with the punk scene. And what was even more important, his vitriolic style of songwriting spoke volumes. The only problem was that his band was almost conventional, but that would be resolved before his debut album even reached the market. Regardless, though, his clever wordplay completely disarmed anybody who held doubts about his innate talent. So that's where we're at. And as we said, the album is called My Aim Is True. July 22nd was its release date in the UK with 12 songs on it. It was released later in America. They changed the cover a little bit by... It was originally a black and white cover in England. They colorized it in the States. And they also added a 13th track to the American version, adding the song Watching the Detectives. At that point, that was when Elvis started to work with a new band called The Attractions. So on this album, every song is with a band that called themselves Clover, except for Watching the Detectives, which was Elvis with The Attractions. And it showed the direction that he was going in, and it also made him that much more popular among the punk fans because The Attractions were more of a hip band, while Clover was more, was really a California sort of like laid-back group. So they didn't fit at all with what the scene was about. And Elvis knew that. He knew that he was probably going to have to do something about it. So he did, very quickly. But this album, nevertheless, represents some of his best work. And his songwriting fit perfectly into what was happening at the scene. Let's open up with two tracks back to back, because the first song is less than 90 seconds long, which proves that it's a punk song, first of all. And we'll let that segue into the second track. So it's Welcome to the Working Week into Miracle Man.
Now that your picture's in the paper being rhythmically admired, you can have anyone that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why, wow, wow. Do it till you do it, till you better get to it. All of your family has your kill to survive, and just waiting for their big day to arrive. But if you are after, you better be alive. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know it don't thrill you, I hope it don't kill you. Welcome to the working week. You gotta do it till you do it, so you better get to it. I hear you saying that the shit's alright when you're only in a bad numbers. Spend all your money getting so convinced that you never even thought of love. Sometimes I wonder if we're living in the same land. Why'd you wanna be my friend when I feel like the children running out of hands? Welcome to the working week. Oh, welcome to the working week. I can tell why
old man. Bella's gotta have the things she wants. You know she's gotta have the things she loves. She's got a 10-inch bamboo cigarette holder and a black leather glove. And I'm doing everything just trying to please her. Miracle me.
Looking back at Elvis's history, his early history, it's pretty incredible the way that things worked out for him, because it wasn't easy, that's for sure. It turns out, I mean, from the 1970, 7 years before punk, he was doing gigs around England under his real name, which is Declan McManus. And he didn't even have a band. He'd be playing like solo gigs because he didn't have enough money to afford a band, basically. It's not too different from Graham Parker's early story when we were talking about that. Eventually, when he had enough, was writing enough material, he was able to approach record labels and see what would happen. But pretty much everybody turned him down that he had spoken to. There was three different labels, I think, that he had wanted to get signed. Well, the first thing that happened really was he decides when he finally gets signed to Stiff Records, he was the very first person to be signed to that label. So it was a bit of a risk on both sides, because if you're a fledgling record label, that means you don't have any star artists. You don't even really have all that much money. So it was really Elvis's only way to get into the music business. And it was through that, his signing with that label that he ended up having Jake Riviera become his manager. And it was Jake who says, well, you can't really be working as Declan McManus. So Elvis actually changed his name to D.P. Costello. And that was going to be his professional name, D.P. Costello. And Declan, I'm sorry, not to listen to me. His manager, Jake Riviera, said, no, you're going to call yourself Elvis. And he thought that was completely ridiculous and irrational. And he was pretty much against the idea, but he decided that it was worth it for the controversy. And he sure did get plenty when he first did it. Fans, or music fans in both Great Britain and America, were basically turning against them, thinking, you know, who do you think you are? What do you mean? You think you're capable of taking the name of Elvis Presley? It just seemed like a really pompous thing for him to do. And he said he didn't mean it as an insult. It was just meant that people would pause just that little extra bit longer to think about, well, who is this guy? And then they changed the way he dressed, because he was working as a computer programmer, from what I understand. And he was just a normal office nerd guy. But now he basically really decided to take the story. He put on Buddy Holly style glasses. He was wearing really tight jackets, and he had his jeans folded up and cuffed at the bottom. All these things that kind of gave him not so much a punk look as a nerdy outsider look. But that look fit perfectly with the attitude of his lyrics, because other punk songs were either kind of straight out, you know, maybe not very intelligent lyrics, or some of them were very, unless you may be talking about The Clash, which were incredibly intelligent and political. Elvis decided that he would go from a personal perspective and allow the vitriol and the frustration that a person who might not be considered to be like the hippest guy in the class growing up, what would that personality be like if you felt like you wanted to feel like you wanted to get revenge on the people who are always giving you a hard time? And he became that character. It was something that he just invented, and it worked brilliantly on this debut album. And not every song had that attitude. For example, this next track proves it. It's a totally different idea. It's more or less, it's probably the saddest song on the album. It's called No Dancing.
Oh, I know that she has made a fool of him. Like girls have done so many nights before, time and time again. But he's so strange, I don't know why. But somebody has to cry. No dancing when they get home. He says, no dancing, there's gonna be no dancing.
For a young songwriter doing a debut album, that song's pretty sophisticated. If you listen to all the changes that are going on and everything, it's pretty remarkable. There's a lot of action musically in that song. Elvis himself said that when he wrote it, he was thinking of the song He's a Rebel by Gene Pitney as inspiration. Which is kind of cool to think about it because he obviously didn't lift anything directly from it. He was probably just going for that feel. And then when he made his song a bit more complex, it totally erased the idea that he was like really judging it from any perspective at all, except for his own. He also like felt that you wanted to give it like a British Merseybeat feel. And that's there. That you can definitely determine. If you understand, like going back to the stuff like Jerry and the Pacemakers and the Beatles and stuff like that. Yeah, there's that is in there in that song. So now we get back to the Elvis with a chip on his shoulder. If the album when it came out in England had 12 songs, you could have said that 11 of them are about revenge, guilt, jealousy, and humiliation. But this one is certainly about anger. Anger pretty much at the entire world. Its title is Blame It on Cain. And he just talks about all the things that he thought are so bad that you can't fix them. Things like the radio, for example. He wrote a song later called Radio, Radio, where he took that even further, that idea. But he brings it up in this song. And he also talks about government burglars, like stealing his money. So, yeah, the government is another thing that you just can't fix. This is like fundamental problems that are just that are going to ruin your life, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's called Blame It on Cain.
Once upon a time, I had a little money. Government burglars took it long before I could mail it to you. Still, you are the only one that I can't let it slip away. So here's the man with the ticker tape that tried to take it. But this is what I'm gonna say. Blame it on Cain. Don't blame it on me. And the money got low, we could always heat it up and trade it in. But then the radio to heaven will be wide to your ears. And you can run down a wave band, post to post, hand in hand. Bad no worse, curse for curse. Don't be dissatisfied. So you're not satisfied. Blame it on Cain. Down, I think I'm going insane. I'm talking to myself for so long. Oh, but I've never been accused. When I step upon your face, and with that good look green, I gotta break out one weekend before I do somebody in. But every single time, I feel a little stronger. They tell me it's a crime. Well, how much longer? Don't blame it on me. Oh, it's nobody's fault. But we need somebody to burn. Blame it on Cain. Oh, please don't blame it on me. It's nobody's fault. But it just seems to be his turn.
Now, the backing band, like I said, was called Clover. The names like John McPhee, Sean Hopper, Johnny Chambody, and Mickey Shine were the basic band. That's, you know, the guitarist, the piano player, bass, and drums. Other members of the band were, one of them was Huey Lewis. He just didn't come to England with the rest of the band to record with Elvis. Otherwise, he would have been on this album, which is sort of hard to, for me to wrap my head around that's true, but there it is. And John McPhee, as a guitar player, had up until this point been playing on albums. He's an excellent, obviously you can tell he's an excellent guitar player, and he sounds great with Elvis on this album. But it's very surprising to hear that he's coming up with that sort of a vibe that he's got, because he was playing with people like Van Morrison, The Grateful Dead, Boz Scaggs, Emmylou Harris, Janis Ian. So you know, eventually after this, he went on to become the guitar player for the Doobie Brothers. So yeah, like, wow, it's a big change. And through all of this, Elvis, what we come to now is like pretty much on the album is the one song that everybody knows. It's probably the most famous song that Elvis ever wrote. And it's also the song that provides the title of the album, My Aim Is True. It's called Allison. And it sounds like a gentle love song. But if you listen to the lyrics, you can feel the frustration that's coming out of what he's singing. And if it's not anger, it's sort of like he just feels as though it's a waste of time, maybe, for him to be trying to help her at all. Apparently, he got the inspiration from a checkout girl at a supermarket that he would go to. And I don't know if he spoke to her and had a conversation, or if he just imagined that she married the wrong man and that now she was like basically depressed about that and her life was not what she expected it to be. So he's like trying to console her, but he's not really, I mean, like I said, it sounds like it's a beautiful and gentle thing that he's doing. But if you listen to it, there's a side about it that almost seems as if he's saying like, look, man, you did this to yourself. Listen to yourself and see what you think. And here's Allison.
So funny to be seeing you after so long, girl. And with the way you look, I understand that you were not impressed. But I heard you let that little friend of mine take off your party dress. I'm not gonna get too sentimental like those other sticker valentines, 'cause I don't know if you are loving somebody. I only know it isn't mine. Allison, I know this world is killing. Got a husband now. Did you leave your pretty fingers lying in the wedding cake? You used to hold him right in your hand. I bet it took all he could take. Sometimes I wish that I could stop you from talking when I hear the silly things that you say. Somebody better put out the big light, 'cause I can't stand to see you this way. Allison, I know this world is killing you. Oh, Allison, my aim is true. My
There it is. I'm trying to think if there's another song that he had written that might be more popular than that one. But, I mean, there's certainly he's got quite a long list of relatively popular songs.
You don't think Watching the Detectives was...
Yeah, that's, I mean, that certainly is up there, and it's on this album as well. I also think maybe Radio Radio, both really early. And from there, I mean, he's one of the most, the guy wrote so many songs and put out so many albums. And I'm a completist. I own all of them. And I want to kill him sometimes because he's the type of guy that, like, when the album came out in one form, you wait 5 years and he would release it again with about maybe 7 or 8 extra tracks that were never released before. So you have to buy that if you're a completist, right? So now I own that album twice. And then 3 years after that, he got a deal with a different label that decided to put out a 2-disc set of his albums, which means now they had, like, instead of 8 songs, they had about maybe 15 or 16 extra tracks. So I had to buy that version of it. And then if you wanted to get the live album that he released that was a rarity, you'd have to buy the box set that contained this album in it. So, I mean, I ended up on, I would say that in a matter of, you know, from then until now, I think I own like 5 or 6 versions of this album. And the same thing with his second album. It was unavoidable if you were a fan. And all that, I'm always saying it, this is how Jake Riviera like ruined, you know, he stole my money basically and gave it all to Elvis. It's the way that it works. It was a smart move because they knew that they had, he had a really rabid fan base. And if you went to record stores and to buy stuff, and you know, if you talked about Elvis Costello, like, oh, here's the new 45, or there's this new rare thing that just came out. Everybody wanted it, and because it was rare, you knew it was going to only get more expensive if you didn't buy it when it first came out. So we would be fighting for it. It's just the way that it was in like the late 70s and early 80s. And Elvis was like one of the most difficult but desirable people to collect for a very long time. Let me remind you that you're listening to WHBC, WHBC HD in Garden City, New York. We are playing the album My Aim Is True in its entirety by Elvis Costello. And we've got one more song on side one, a song about how infidelity or the thought of infidelity can basically mess everything up. It's called Sneaky Feelings.
Now everybody's breaking up somebody else's home. Before somebody else starts breaking up their own, I get you in my dreams, you should do the things you say. It's not that it's so much fun, but it's safer that way. Sneaky feelings, sneaky feelings. You can't let those kind of feelings show. I like to get right through the way I feel for you, but I still got a long way to go. Why don't we call it a day and we can both confess and can force me to use a little tenderness? White lies, alibis, or anything that say that it's true. We could sit like lovers staring in each other's eyes, but the magic of the moment might become too much for you. Sneaky feelings, sneaky feelings. You can't let those kind of feelings show. I like to get right through the way I feel for you, but I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long way to go. Oh, I still got a long, long, long way to go. I still got a long way to go.
So that ends side one of the very first Elvis Costello album that was released. And flipping over the vinyl for side two, we have a song which could maybe be like a sort of a follow-up to Allison. It was another popular song, maybe the second most popular song on the album. It's called Angels Wanna Wear My Red Shoes. And it's really hard to figure out what this one is about. I'm not really sure. I think that the angels, I think, are just like things that happen. Angels being like something that's not necessarily real, but he's trying to make things work out for himself. But these angels are making it hard for him to get things done. And the red shoes, I think, is about his freedom or the thing that he is desiring from the woman. And like the angels are pretty much trying to stop him in his tracks, is how I understand it. So that's my thought. You can hear it any way you want, though. Here's the Angels Wanna Wear My Red Shoes.
Why, I used to be disgusted, and now I try to be amused. But since the winds have got rusted, you know the angels wanna wear my red shoes. But when they told me by the side of the bargain, that's when I knew that I could not refuse. And I won't get any older. Now the angels wanna wear my red shoes. Oh, I was watching while you're dancing away. I look at Ratchet in the echo and sway. How come everybody wants to be your friend? You know that it's just to say it. Oh, I know she's disgusted.
Oh, why's that?
Cause she's feeling so amused.
Oh, that's too bad.
She gets tired of the lust.
Oh, I'm so sad.
But it's so hard to refuse. Can you say that I'm too old when the angels have stolen my red shoes? Oh, I said I'm so happy I could die. She said drop and left with another guy. That's what you get if you go chasing after vengeance. Ever since you got me pumped, your this has been my sentence. So I used to be disgusted when I try to be amused. Since the wings have got rusted, you know the angels wanna wear my red shoes. But when they told me about the side of the bargain, that's when I knew that I could not refuse.
Is the angels want to wear my red shoes? What are they going to do with them? Now, the next, Elvis is not particularly a political songwriter. I would say that you would definitely say that about The Clash. The Clash were definitely a political band. Elvis, not so much, but he's not afraid of it either. And on this next song, that's quite obvious, because this next song was the very first single that he ever released. And it's a really strange idea for a single to be, your debut single, to be about a fascist from World War II, a political fascist whose name was Oswald Mosley. He was a pretty famous person at the time, a good-looking guy who was an incredibly good orator, but he was a fascist. And he was trying to convince people during World War II that the best thing that they could do is basically surrender to Hitler. And he was pushing for that. And he ended up actually imprisoned because of his beliefs and what he was trying to do. I don't know. I don't know what type of prison, and I don't really know how long, but it was a political, it was a big issue. And Elvis on this song, more or less, kind of like mocks him openly. He even suggests that he might have been guilty of rape and incest in the lyrics, because he's doing some pretty, well, he's got Oswald doing some pretty strange things in this song. So this is him making a point about government corruption and maybe even censorship. And it's called Less Than Zero.
Calling Mr. Oswald with a swastika tattoo. There is a vacancy waiting in the English voodoo. I'm a beeper vandal on the filter bar's head. When it's had a number, that maybe you'll take him to bed too. He's alive, or he wishes he was dead. Turn up the TV, no one listening will suspect. Even your mother won't detect it, so your father won't know. They think that I got no respect, but everything means less than zero. Sister are doing it again. They got the finest home movies that you have ever seen. They got a thousand variations, every service with a smile. They're gonna take a little break and they'll be back after a while. Well, I hear the South America is coming in a style. Mr. Oswald said he had an understanding with the law. He said he heard about a couple living in the USA. He said they traded in their baby for a Chevrolet. Said talk about the future, now we put that past away.
Than Zero, which brings us now to yet another song about sex. You don't think of Elvis as being a particularly sexual person, but on this album,
he's got sexy time.
It comes up a lot, right? In this instance, it's like he's singing from the perspective of a young teenager. I think it sounds like it's a 14-year-old who might be like the person singing this, not a grown man. The song is called Mystery Dance. I think it speaks for itself, and we'll segue that into Pay It Back, since Mystery Dance is just about 90 seconds long too, like the opening song. So we'll play it back to back, Mystery Dance and then Pay It Back.
Romeo was restless, he was ready to kill. He jumped out the window cause he couldn't sit still. Juliet was waiting with a safety net. Said, don't bury me cause I'm not dead yet. Why don't you tell me about the mystery dance? I wanna know about the mystery dance. Why don't you show me cause I tried and I tried and I still mystified. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. Well, I remember when the lights went out and I was trying to make it look like it was never in doubt. Thought that I knew and I thought that she knew. So both of us were willing, but we didn't know how to do it. Why don't you tell me about the mystery dance? I wanna know about the mystery dance. Why don't you
show me, cause I tried and I tried and I'm still mystified. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. Covers in the middle of the night, trying to discover my left foot from my right. You can see those pictures in any magazine, but what's the use of looking when you don't know what they mean? Why don't you tell me about the mystery dance? I want to know about the mystery dance. Why don't you show me? Cause I tried and I tried and I'm still mystified. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied.
I'm just going to keep playing the music because I've only got enough time to maybe even get all the songs in. We'll do what we can. We're going to start with I'm Not Angry, then Waiting for the End of the World, which is what closed the original album. And from there, of course, we'll go to Watching the Detectives, at least get as much of it in as we can. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Upstairs at the bar, friend, where I'm left here to listen. I hear you calling his name, I hear the stutter of ignition. I could hear you whispering as I crept by your door, so you found some other joker who could please you. Why I'm not I know such thing as an original sin. I got this camera click, click, clicking in my head. I got you talking.
rocking with your hands, got you smiling with your legs. Spent all my time in the Vanity Factory, wondering when they're gonna come and take it all back. I'm not angry.
Never close. You snatch a chew and you match your cigarette. watching the detectives. Oh, he's so cute. She's watching the detectives. Oh, and they shoot, 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 shoot. They beat him up until the teardrops start. But he can't do it because he's got no heart. Alone until you realize you're in it. Now fear is here to stay. Love is here for everything. Call it instant justice. When it's past the legal limit. Someone's scratching at the window. I wonder who is a better detective from the check. If you belong to the parents who are ready to hear the rest about their daughter's disappearance. So it really took a miracle to get you to stay. It only took my little fingers to blow you away.
The following is brought to you by American Hit Network,